Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my very special guest, Scott Hamburger. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Wayne. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Scott is the co-president, which I want to dig into a little bit more about. He's the co-president and chief executive officer of Fortessa Inc., which is a leading international designer and developer and marketer of upscale tableware products for the hospitality industry and the home as well. Scott co-founded the Sterling, Virginia-based company with his brother Eric, who's the other co-president and COO, in 1993, shortly after graduating college. He heads development, business processes, and marketing operations, and has guided a growth strategy that has propelled the company to the front ranks of the tableware industry. How big is the industry?
That's hard to say.
Okay.
The tableware industry is a highly fragmented industry. There aren't any really good, reliable studies out there to tell you what the total size of it is. But we reckon that we're about in the top three doing what we do, which is serving the high end of the hospitality and retail trade. We really focus on three stars and above in the hospitality trade, and we focus on better quality retail stores and high-end consumers in consumer products.
So you're selling through the retail market?
We have four main channels
that we
analyze. One is the commercial food service industry, clubs, hotels, resorts, et cetera. Second is the consumer products trade, so that's sales to retailers.
Okay.
Third is direct to consumer, and the fourth is export. So we've got a very broad range of customers, given that we cover all of those sectors. But typically, you'll find us in three stars and above in the hotel space. About 85% of all the 4- and 5-star hotels in North America are Fortessa customers, which is a great statistic that we're very proud of. In the retail trade, you'll find us in better quality retailers like Williams-Sonoma, Pottery Barn, Crate & Barrel, Sur La Table. In the rental space, you'll find us in the biggest rental companies in the country. And then, given our export business, we have a presence, an active presence, in about 20 countries around the world. You'll find us wherever you travel, Wayne.
You know, that is very exciting. I think I've seen some of the stuff that you sell in some of the restaurants I've eaten in locally. There's some, I guess I could say, passion fish. Do they use your stuff?
Absolutely. They're a longtime customer, Passion Food Hospitality, a great operation, longtime customer. Proud to have been working with them for, golly, maybe 15 years now.
And they have really neat tableware.
They're one of the forks and the knives.
It's very unique stuff.
They're one of my favorite customers. Love to go to their restaurants all the time.
So are you from this area originally? How did you come to D.C. and how did you start up Fortessa? Let's start with just getting into the area. When did you get here?
We actually grew up on a farm in south central Pennsylvania. We moved there as a family in the early 1970s. It's a great place to be a kid, tramping around the woods, hunting, fishing, all those good things. And we certainly did the Emersonian experiment, and we were self-sufficient for a number of years, growing a lot of our own food.
Yeah,
good stuff. We moved to the Washington area when we were teenagers, so I really think of it as the best of both worlds, childhood in the country, and as your interests change a little bit as a teen, growing up in the big city. Went to high school at Gonzaga, stayed local at Georgetown, and we started the business when we were in college. So we were already here, and we stayed local. We ended up in Northern Virginia, and I call it the best decision that we never made. It was sort of by default. But it's a great place to locate a business, and even as we've opened facilities in other places around the country and around the world, we've made a very conscious decision now to stay in Northern Virginia.
Why was Northern Virginia so appealing to set up a business? I mean, is it a business-friendly environment or taxes low, or what is it that attracts you continuously to Northern Virginia as a place to do business?
There are a number of factors, one of which is the outstanding, really world-class labor force that we can tap into. We are in a high-end, fashion-oriented business. We sell to sophisticated customers, so therefore we have certain requirements in terms of the people that we have in the company. A second factor certainly is it's a great home market. Within a two-hour radius, you have a significant proportion of the nation's wealth, so it's a fantastic place to have a headquarters. Thirdly, getting people to us and getting our people around the world. We can get anyone, pretty much anywhere in the world, on a direct flight through Dulles Airport. We have customers coming from around the world to see us at our headquarters in Sterling. Also, the access to the port of Norfolk, which is one of the best ports in the country, and also a port where there's room to grow. A lot of the other ports are congested. We never have problems in Norfolk. It's very reliable, good for our supply chain management. We're also able to get product back out for our export customers through the port of Norfolk, so that's important. And then finally, Virginia. The Old Dominion's a great place to locate a business.
And it is a great place.
Perennial in the top one or two.
Now, when you said you started the business back in college, were you always selling tableware, or were you doing other things?
No, I like to say that my brother and I were ruined at a very young age. We were the children of entrepreneurs, and so we grew up in a very entrepreneurial environment. We internalized early on the notions of independence and economic self-sufficiency. As kids, we helped our mother in various of her different businesses. And so for us, it was never a question of whether we would start a business. It was what kind of business would it be? So when we were in college, my brother had spent some time in Europe. He came back from his travels and he said, "Scott, I have a great idea. Let's start a business in international trade." I said, "Sounds good to me." So I got a credit card advance, which is why I'm still stuck being the finance guy. And we started off with Indian jewelry. And we traded whatever we could get our hands on that we thought we could sell for a profit, learned a lot. But we ended up in tableware based on identifying inefficiencies in the channels of distribution as they existed at that time. And secondly, based on the availability of trade credit. A lot of manufacturers around the world wanted to get into the U.S. market. If you offered a channel that market, then they were willing to support you.
Where is most of the tableware manufactured today? Where do you find, who are the top countries that export that type of product?
It seems that whenever a country industrializes, one of the first industries that springs up is ceramic production or glass production and metalware. And I think it's largely because the products in many respects are very basic. We've had ceramics in one form or another since, you know, the dawn of time, practically, right, since before recorded history. Same thing with glass. You know, it's basically melted sand. So they're pretty basic products. Mm-hmm. So they tend to spring up very early on in the industrialization cycle. So there's a lot of tableware production around the world. We try to maintain a very diversified base of production. For a number of reasons. One, of course, is to make sure that our supply chain is shock resistant. We want to make sure that we don't have too much of a concentration anywhere in the world.
In one supplier, right?
Secondly, what we are able to do as a designer, developer, and marketer is to sell the best of what's available in the global marketplace. So we are not tied to fixed assets on the production side, which means that when we're selling a product, you know, we can say, "Well, you should buy my product." "Well, why should I buy your product?" "Well, it's the best there is." "Well, why is it the best there is?" We don't have to say, "Well, it's because it's what we make, so therefore it must be the best there is." We can say, "Actually, it's the best there is because we operate in the global marketplace. We find the people who are on the cutting edge of whatever production is relevant for that particular category of goods, and we can flexibly move our production to bring the best of what's available to our customers." And that's a value proposition that we're constantly improving and constantly building value for our customers and our products.
How do you find the best there is? How do you go about searching out, finding, and then, you know, actually realizing that these products are the best there is?
Well, if you'd asked me when I was 20 years old if I planned on being an expert in tableware, I probably would have looked at you a little strangely. But we've been around the industry for a very long time. My brother and I have spent the last 20 years doing this. We really grew up in the business. Between us and primarily my brother, who does our production and our sourcing, we visited thousands of factories around the world. We've also participated in the evolution of the technology. One of the things that makes Fortessa unique is that we're constantly innovating and experimenting. Years ago, by way of example, you know, what we sold was pretty plain vanilla porcelain.
Right.
Kaolin, quartz, feldspar. So we came up with the notion that if we put different additives into the raw materials, alumina oxide, for example, we could add strength, impact resistance, chip resistance, thermal shock resistance to the product. So today, if you look at what's sold in the marketplace, there's very little, especially in the high end, plain vanilla porcelain.
Okay.
Everything has a special additive. We use magnesium oxide, we use alumina oxide, and we sell a lot of bone china with calcium phosphate that gives the product more impact resistance and chip resistance. Innovation process.
And is it something that is microwavable, or is it something that, you know, that adapts with new technologies of heating and storing and things like that?
It's a great question. And given that our roots are in the commercial food service industry, we've always designed and developed products for use by professionals in very demanding environments. High-turn restaurants that are doing multiple seatings per night, big banquet facilities. So there are a lot of practical considerations that go into the product. It has to be stored, has to be washed, has to be handled in large quantities.
Over and over again.
Right. So we pay a lot of attention to the details. You know, if it's one thing to sell a plate, it's another thing to sell a plate that's engineered to be impact resistant, chip resistant, that's designed so that it will stack properly and store in a smaller space. It's another thing to make sure you've got all the right plate covers that your customers need for that product. So there's a tremendous amount of detail that goes into the design of our products. As we have expanded into the consumer products business and having products that ultimately end up in the homes of consumers, our bona fides coming from that professional background, from that very rigorous standard for the commercial food service industry, make for a product that is eminently beautiful. It's elegant enough for life special occasions, but it's totally practical and you can use it every single day. I like to say you can have company over the night before and the next morning eat your breakfast cereal out of it and throw it in the dishwasher both times.
Do you find that the consumer market is your growth area today? Is that where you guys are really trying to expand?
We're very fortunate to have diversified our business quite a lot. And if you look at our company today and compare it to where it was in 2004, 2005, the company's practically unrecognizable. And you know, for those in the audience that are entrepreneurs, one piece of advice that I would have is we live in a very volatile world, and right. The half-life of a business model is extremely short. So if you as a business owner, as a manager, are not constantly taking apart, deconstructing your business model and rebuilding it, you're very liable to being left behind in this rapidly changing world. So we as a company are constantly evaluating what we do, what is our unique selling proposition, what's our competitive advantage, how can we leverage the competencies that we have to get into new markets. So over the last period of time, we've diversified a lot into the global, the export market, and now export is about 20% of our total sales as an enterprise. We've diversified into the consumer product space where we weren't particularly present before, and that has been a high growth area for us, even during the downturn. Certainly, we've diversified into the rental space as well, and we're very fortunate to be able to say that our core business, the legacy business, has also grown during that time.
And you were doing this during the economic downturn? The company was growing?
Fortunately, we had begun the process of diversification prior to the downturn. So right. Even during the downturn, while we didn't experience growth in every market sector, we always had growth in certain market sectors.
Excellent.
But the difficulty, of course, with diversification is that, you know, in theory, if everything works properly at the same time, you know, my goodness, your sales should be at a certain level. The challenge, of course, with any diversification is that nothing works all together at the same time. So,
it's a hedge, too.
It's a very significant hedge. There's absolutely no question about it.
I'm interested in the export side of the business. How does that work? Who are you exporting it to, and where are you exporting it from?
Sure. We actually got pulled into the export market. It wasn't as if we woke up one day and said, hey, let's start exporting. People were coming to us. Number one, we sell to a very peripatetic industry. General manager at one hotel.
Maybe these are big words. Emersonian, peripatetic. I don't know if I better get my dictionary out.
We'll play bingo with them. So in any event, people travel a lot from one property to another. So mm-hmm. If you take care of people, if you give them good service, if you deliver on your brand promise, then they will bring you with them. And so we started to get inquiries from people overseas who'd worked with us in the United States, say, hey, I'm in England now, or I'm in Canada now, and you know, can I still work with Fortessa? So we kind of, that's interesting. And then we had people that started to approach us who said, you know, we love what you're doing with this business model in the U.S. We want to do that in Canada. We want to do that in Germany or Latin America. And so people really pulled us into the global marketplace. And what it illustrated for us, because you can get glassware and flatware and Chinaware anywhere in the world.
Sure.
What it illustrates is that what we had built in terms of a brand and in terms of a collection of products had much more intrinsic value than just the sum of the individual components. So we got into the global marketplace really starting in 2004, 2005. Canada's our largest export market. Latin America is our second largest. We opened a company in China in 2008, and Southeast Asia is growing very well for us as well. The Middle East is a strong market. Europe is a smaller market for us, but an important presence, and also Australia. So we're pretty active around the world.
What's been your greatest challenge in growing the business?
I would say that the greatest challenge is the relationship with the business itself. And by that, I mean that for an entrepreneur, most of us look at a business like a baby that we've raised. And you know, certainly in the early stages, with the very wise advice and participation of my parents, Eric and I were pretty much on our own. You know, we would go out in the morning and make sales calls. We'd come back to the warehouse and ship orders in the afternoon, and then we'd do our work late into the night, sleep on a fold-out couch. Fortunately, the warehouse had a shower. Get up and do it all again the next day. So a business is really very much like something that you've raised from its birth. But if you don't separate yourself at a certain point from the business, if you don't recognize that if the business does not become independent of you, you don't really own the business. The business owns you. So at a certain point, Eric and I made a very explicit, launched a very explicit mission to build a world-class management team. And that process, the process of making the company independent and built to last for the long term, has been the greatest challenge.
Scott Hamburger, if people want to get in touch with you to find out more about Fortessa, how do they do that?
Certainly via our website at www.fortessa.com. And my email address is SM, like Scott Martin, Hamburger, HAMBERGER, at fortessa.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
It's a pleasure, Wayne. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. Join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.